Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington, and here are some of the stories we're covering today, Monday, August 13th, 2018. Peace talks resume in Khartoum to tackle the outstanding issues.
We need to discuss the powers, functions, and duties of the president, the first vice president, and the other four vice presidents.
And some analysts say 3 years with such a bloated government won't work very well.
They usually say that politics, one day is a long time in politics, and therefore 3 years for a transition will be a very long time indeed.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Peace talks in Khartoum got underway today to resolve the outstanding issues in the power-sharing deal signed last week. South Sudan's government spokesman says the parties will work to resolve differences over the power of the presidency, judicial power, and other areas of dispute. Michael Atit reports for VOA from Khartoum.
Information Minister Michael Makweyi, who is one of the key administration's negotiators, says the warring parties will discuss what he calls minor issues that were not resolved during the previous talks.
There were two bracketed issues which we bracketed when we were in Ethiopia, and that is on the composition of the Judiciary Reform Committee, and another bracketed issue was on the composition of the National Constitutional Amendment Committee, NCAC. These are very minor issues.
Makweyi says the parties must also define the power and responsibilities of the presidency so that the newly created positions of the vice presidents do not overlap each other.
We need to discuss the powers, functions, and duties of the president, the first vice president, and the other four vice presidents. Of course, these are new positions which have been created, and as such, there is need to revisit the powers and competencies of all these.
According to the power-sharing agreement signed last week by the parties, which left several issues unresolved, President Salva Kiir will remain president, while rebel leader Riek Machar will resume his post as first vice president. The agreement also categorizes cabinet ministries into sectoral clusters. The first vice president will be tasked with overseeing the governance cluster, while each of the four vice presidents shall oversee the country's economy, service delivery, infrastructure, and gender and youth issues. Makweyi says the parties will also work to resolve one of the most contentious issues, the number of states and their boundaries.
If we agree on the outstanding issues, then the implementation matrix will be drafted, and that will be followed by the draft agreement that will be given to the parties for consideration before it goes to the Council of Ministers of IGAD.
In a report presented to IGAD Council of Ministers meeting in Khartoum last week, Ismail Wise, IGAD Special Envoy for South Sudan, confirmed that the warring parties will work to finalize pending issues in Chapter 1 of the agreement to resolve conflict in the Republic of South Sudan. Participants at the talks have formed three committees to handle outstanding issues. One will work on the number of states and their boundaries. A second committee will handle the functions and the responsibility of the presidency, while the third committee will focus on creation of new ministries, judicial reforms, and the National Constitutional Amendment. These committees are expected to present their reports tomorrow. Makweyi says he and other delegates at the talks hope to have a draft revitalized peace agreement by Sunday. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum, Sudan.
Some analysts are warning it will be difficult to maintain the bloated government outlined in the signed power-sharing deal for 3 years. Mohamed Youssef has this report for VOA from Nairobi.
South Sudanese leaders will have a 3-year transitional period to put the country on a path toward peace and resettle its people, both those who fled the country and those internally displaced. During the transition period, the country will be run by a government that includes 5 vice presidents, 35 cabinet ministers, and 550 legislators. Deo Gumba is a researcher with the Institute for Security Studies. He says countries and international organizations will find it difficult to fund and maintain such a bloated government.
It will require a lot of support from donors and international partners to ensure that this bloated government works. The transition period of 3 years is quite a long time. They usually say that politics, one day is a long time in politics, and therefore 3 years for a transition will be a very long time indeed. To be able to do things that would change the situation quickly, because the longer it stays, the more things are likely to remain the same.
James Akuk, a political science lecturer at the University of Juba, sees the transition going longer than 3 years.
If a lot of things are not put in place, it could be extended for a few months, especially if the election preparation need some more time, they could extend it even to four years. So it's not a big deal, because a lot has been destroyed in South Sudan, and you need a real transitional period where you can put things back to order.
As part of implementing the peace agreement, South Sudanese President Salva Kiir on Thursday granted amnesty to rebel leader Riek Machar and other opposition leaders. Some regional observers have welcomed the renewed effort to end South Sudan's civil war, but Akuk says a lot needs to be done to change people's behavior in solving their differences.
The mentality that has developed during this time of conflict, that mentality has created a culture of war, culture of violence. So there's a lot of work to be done, really, to reset that mentality of the people, so that they really adopt the culture of peace, and then they can resort to the rule of law in case of any differences or any difficulties.
South Sudan has been mired in civil war since December 2013. The United Nations says the war has driven more than 4 million people from their homes, with more than 2 million people living as refugees in nearby countries. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
A coalition of advocates for South Sudan has been lobbying for an inclusive peace deal that addresses the social and economic issues in the country. But its president says the group is cautiously optimistic about the deal reached in Khartoum. Ruben Garang tells INBR that the coalition will continue to press the region to hold top leaders accountable.
Fear is the trust whether these leaders who brought us where we are today are going to be different leaders this time. Are they going to change? Are they going to prioritize the interests of the people? Are they going to be caring about the people? Are they going to be mindful about the impact of their decision-making, their political decision-making?
What stipulations exactly are you not comfortable with?
The idea that, you know, when people say that peace has been signed, or peace is signed, it's a good thing, right? It's a good sign, because that's what each and every, not everybody, but most of the South Sudanese are looking for. But, you know, the governance part, for example, is this something that really concerns us, because the arrangement of the government, all these positions that have been created, the five vice presidency, the big number of the people in house, those are things that should have not been done the way they are, but already they have been done, and we are just praying that, you know, the peace come with whatever that is in it, and result into a real peace.
Is the peace deal inclusive?
You know that the process itself was not inclusive, because it's people that is what they call the gun class that are being invited on the table, and so the inclusivity, you know, is another question, because you have to be, you know, violent or someone with military might to be able to come to the table, and your views will be listened to. So it's somehow inclusive in terms of the political group or the gun groups being represented, but I don't know how inclusive it is when it comes to, you know, abuse of the communities, abuse of the civil organizations and diaspora, and, you know, people that are victims of this war.
Ruben, what's your reaction to the addition of the Independent Boundaries Commission as stipulated in the latest agreement? Do you have any advice to the Independent Boundaries Commission?
My advice would be that they listen to people and also to, you know, prioritize, you know, the need of at least building trust. I know that they are commissioned to do something, but they could also look at issues, realities, the parameters around the issue that they are commissioned to do, and come up with, you know, recommendation that would, you know, make it something that is meaningful to the life of the people instead of adding, you know, fuel to the fire.
That was Ruben Garang, president of the Coalition of Advocates of South Sudan. He was speaking to Ian Bior from Winnipeg, Manitoba, in Canada, late last week. You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. President Kiir says the army should be composed of all South Sudanese tribes. Find out more on that when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what can be done to improve crop production in your region?
Okay, to improve crop production, we need funding. And then the farmers, they need to be sensitized and trained for better ways of planting crops or trees for fruits.
Introducing irrigation systems. As we know, we're living in the dry season and the rains are not frequently falling. So the irrigation systems can help farmers to grow the recommended crops they need.
To improve crop production in my region, the farmers should be practicing crop rotation. For example, this season, they should either cultivate maize and the next season, soya. Like, the soya provides nutrients to the soil.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Some youth in Juba say they welcome President Salva Kiir's recent call to form a national army composed of all 64 tribes of South Sudan. Young people say they will be eager to serve in an army like that once the conflict ends. At a University of Juba graduation ceremony over the weekend, the president said making the army all-inclusive would eliminate the perception that South Sudan's army is tribal because it's overwhelmingly dominated by the president's ethnic community. Manyang David Mayar has details for VOA from Juba.
President Kiir says the time has come to change the army's composition.
Many people say that the SPLA is a tribal army. That is why some of the opposition groups were calling for it to be disbanded. The new national army that will be established for our country will have a national character. Every state and every tribe must contribute and see itself in. This time, all the 64 tribes of South Sudan must encourage their children to join a new national army of South Sudan.
South Sudan's army includes many soldiers who are former rebel fighters for the Sudan's People's Liberation Army, or SPLA, a rebel movement formed in 1983, primarily by South Sudanese students and cattle keepers. Most of those recruited were volunteers who chose to fight and risk giving their lives for the liberation of the South Sudanese people from what rebel officials described as oppression and marginalization by successive regimes in Khartoum. President Kiir says many other South Sudanese still don't want to join the army for fear of being killed during times of war. Young South Sudanese living in Juba say they are ready to join the army and would give their lives for the sake of their country. 23-year-old Laura Richard says he would join the army and defend South Sudan if given the chance and if it is an all-inclusive army.
I have the opportunity of defending, really defend our country as joining SPLA. Has been a selection of all the tribes. Yes, the president is right to say that. Yes, we have the right to defend our country. We need to be facilitated as been joining the army.
Juba University student David Mayor says he would be proud to serve his country in the army.
Maybe later there will be interruption somewhere. I can go and defend that as a young person. Even though I'd go and die, let me die on behalf of my people.
22-year-old Sandy Ileshano says she is eager to see the new national army be formed and would become a soldier to end sexual abuse of women and girls in South Sudan.
I want to join SPLA because here in South Sudan, there are a lot of things going to happen. So if we are not there, we cannot solve the problems which are here. These crimes that is happening nowadays, the soldiers are raping women, young ladies. It's not good. I will not allow that to happen in front of me.
Abraham Kualinyuan, a political science professor at the University of Juba, says the problems in South Sudan's army are more complicated than questions of tribal or gender representation.
It is the professionalism and the strategy that make wars to be won. For the military strategy to be able to be successful, there are three things that are very important. The commander of the army, the people who are on the ground, and the government itself. These are the three legs, they call the trinity of the military strategy. And this is what is missing in our country here. The commander doesn't know his role, and the government don't know how to handle the military.
Kual says, while equitable tribal representation in the army can be a good thing, the government needs to build military barracks, structures and residential areas out of the towns and raise the standard of living for the national army in order to make it capable of defending a nation. For VOA News, I'm Anyang David Mayar in Juba.
South Sudanese youth at a refugee settlement in Uganda's Adjumani district say despite the UN Refugee Agency's best efforts, opportunity is lacking for youth to showcase their talent, learn new skills, and be more productive members of their communities at the settlement. Adjumani district celebrated International Youth Day along with the rest of the world yesterday under the UN theme Safe Places and Spaces for Youth. Simon Peter Apiku has the story for VOA from Adjumani in northern Uganda.
Designated by the UN in 1999, International Youth Day provides an opportunity for governments and other stakeholders to assess progress on empowering youth. The UN says this year's theme refers to spaces created for people who feel marginalized to come together and share experiences and expectations and to take part in activities in safe places. South Sudanese refugee Drago Christopher is a youth leader at Agodzo Camp.
Here in Agodzo, we don't have youth centers actually. This is where the challenges we have here. They only play under this tree here, this tree you have seen here. They used to play these cards. Yeah, they spend their times in that.
22-year-old Agodzo resident William Oja says youth usually meet up at trading centers in the camp, which in most cases are not ideal places to share constructive ideas.
There are different people coming in this place. There are some who are drunkard. There are some people who are even having their bad thoughts in whatever somebody is talking. But if you are expressing something, it might be somebody might take it positively or negatively.
Oja completed his senior secondary education in South Sudan and is still waiting for a chance to go to college. He says he spends much of his day, like hundreds of youth in the settlement, chatting under trees in the nearby trading center, playing cards or dominoes, or watching football. For young girls at the camp, conditions can be worse. They often face sexual harassment, early marriage, or rape, according to 18-year-old Agnes, who says she became pregnant at the camp at age 17.
You may see that your friend having wealth, and you might think that for us, we are very poor. And if I go to this guy, I might be safe, or I might get some wealth from him.
Christopher, Oja, and Agnes all say idleness among youth often leads to alcohol and drug abuse, which in turn can lead to violence and even criminal behavior. At a celebration marking International Youth Day, Opio Joseph, a representative of the Resident District Commissioner's Office, says young people should steer clear of certain activities.
Like theft, alcoholism. The other thing is opium taking. Yeah, youth who are taking a lot of opium. And sometimes when I move around, I see very many mad people. And it's because of opium and over-drinking. So youth should avoid all those things.
Adjumani District has a population of about 250,000. Half of them are South Sudanese refugees. Refugee leaders say discotheques that have popped up in the settlements are causing a lot of harm at the settlement. Uganda's Deputy Prime Minister, Moses Ali, who also spoke at the event, agrees.
I've called many times the district councils to stop night dance, because at night many things can happen. They dance at night, they sell drink, they do all sorts of things, and they rape, then they spread AIDS and so on and so on. This must stop.
Ali says if the nightclubs are not shut down, youth will be destroyed. Young people here say the UN Refugee Agency and its partners are trying to support youth with a number of projects designed to engage them in constructive activities, empower them to earn some money and change their lives, but they say more needs to be done to keep young refugees away from bad influences. For VOA News, I'm Simon Peter Apiku in Adjumani.
Eight Australian mayors from the cities of Durban, Hume, Moreland, Whittlesey, Yarra, Knox, Monash, and Melton all gathered in Melbourne today to support South Sudanese living in Australia following media reports there of gang violence among some South Sudanese men in the country. The mayors say young South Sudanese will continue to be welcome in Australia, and Australians value the contributions made by South Sudanese. South Sudanese journalist Matach Mordecai says mainstream Australian media sometimes portrays a false image of the South Sudanese community in Australia.
Yeah, there have been a lot of issues in the media, especially into the higher level. And the current Prime Minister, Malcolm Turnbull, saying that Sudanese are gangs. And also the former Prime Minister, Tony Abbott, saying that Africans are difficult people. They shouldn't allow Africans in the first place to settle in Australia. And he was saying they should revisit the process of allowing Africans to come to Australia. And because of those kind of what I call baseless remarks, because South Sudanese are doing their everyday life things and they go to uni, they go to work, but there is a number of a small number of youth who are struggling with feeding into the system. As is normal for any young people, when you go to a new environment, a new country, new way of life, there will be challenges. And these challenges need to be addressed as such.
In the backdrop of these media reports, how do you feel as a South Sudanese Australian? Do you feel like you're at home?
Well, in fact, I feel unwelcome, especially after the remark, because just imagine when you have a remark of a top leader, this is a prime minister of the country, which is equivalent to depend on the country, the other places you have president and so on. If a president said something like that, what will a normal citizen do? That means the top leader is giving green light to others. They will look down into us. And now when I take a transport like a tram, train or bus, as I said, I don't feel welcome. People, if they see me sitting there, they will move away from me because the media makes them feel scared because they say, or African are gangs, or South Sudanese are gangs, and that makes people fearful of me as a South Sudanese.
In your line of duty, you interact with a lot of South Sudanese community leaders. What are these leaders doing to address these issues with some young South Sudanese who are always in the news?
The community leaders are trying their best, but also you need to understand that the new country, the new environment has a lot of challenges. First of all, now, when kids go to school, there is a lot of challenges there. Like, back in Africa, where we grow up, including me, We used to do everything at the school. You come back home and you have after a school program, you go back to the school. Like the school will contribute maybe 90 or 80%. But in this country, school contribute 50 and families contribute 50. And now with that, it's very complicated. It is hard to digest that. The leaders are trying their best to inform the general public of South Sudanese that we need to address these issues. But since the system here is different, as I said, now, way of disciplining kids is different. Some kids, they kind of taking their ride without responsibilities. Like if the parents say, look, you kids, you need to go to school, you need to study, sometimes they might say no. Now, the parent will feel like they're powerless.
What are some of the success stories of South Sudanese Australians?
There is a lot of South Sudanese Australians who are very successful. For example, the first person who played footy, which is a Australian football, is Majak Dow. He started, I think, 9 or 8 years ago. We have people like Alera Lair. They play footy. We have a number of lawyers, and we have a lot of graduates from different disciplines, including medicine. You see, these are good role models.
That's South Sudanese journalist Matach Mordecai, who works at 3Z 92.3 FM radio in Melbourne, Australia. He was speaking with my colleague John Tanza in Melbourne earlier today. Two top Kenyan government officials and 16 other people pleaded not guilty today to allegedly skimming money from a major rail project linking Nairobi to Mombasa. The chairman of the National Land Commission and the managing director of the Kenya Railways Corporation were among those charged with fraud, totaling about $2.2 million. The new high-speed rail line is a $3 billion project funded by China. Officials say no Chinese officials or companies were charged in the fraud case, which allegedly involved fake claims of compensation for land for the project. It's the latest high-profile corruption case amid President Uhuru Kenyatta's campaign to root out endemic graft, but very few people have been prosecuted. And that's our show for this Monday. We leave you with the song L'Argent Appelle L'Argent by Pamela Monka. Been listening to Pamela Maunka with the song L'Argent Appelle L'Argent. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. We're glad you could be here. We'd like to hear what you think about the show. You can leave a comment at southsudan@voanews.com, or you can reach us on Facebook. Our title is South Sudan in Focus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.